The views expressed on the Final Star Radio do not necessarily reflect those of Asheville FM, Friends of Community Radio, or any of the affiliate radio stations airing the show. You're listening to WSFM LP 103.3 in Asheville, North Carolina. This is The Final Straw, and I'm Bursa Goodness.
And I'm William Goodenough.
The show can also be heard on KXCF in Marshall, California, KWTF in Potomac Bay, California, KOWALP in Olympia, Washington, and WCRS in Columbus, Ohio. The show will later be archived at thefinalstrawradio.noblogs.org, and you can email us with questions or suggestions at thefinalstrawradio. thefinalstrawradio@riseup.net. If you care to, you can send us an actual letter at The Final Straw, care of Asheville FM, 864 Haywood Road, Asheville, North Carolina, 28806.
The show is brought to you by Firestorm Books and Coffee. Located at 610 Haywood Road, Firestorm Books and Coffee is a worker-owned cooperative in Asheville specializing in offbeat, underground, and independent literature. Firestorm's full catalog of books and zines can be found online at firestorm.coop. This week, we're speaking with Gary from Kansas City about the fast-approaching Day of Solidarity with Transgender Prisoners, which will occur this Friday, January 22nd. In this interview, we talk about Gary's past experience with the prison system, the original call-out for this day by trans prisoner Marius Mason, and the conditions that trans people generally face in prison, also the importance of focusing on this issue. For more on this day and to get ideas and to give report backs, you can visit transprisoners.net. For more information on Marius Mason's case, you can visit supportmariusmason.org. And if you'd like to send our guest an email to get ideas on how to proceed, you can write Gary at gcwagaman, that's gcwagaman @gmail.com.
I'd like to read a statement from Marius Mason himself regarding January 22nd. So this is Marius' statement for the Trans Prisoner Day of Action and Solidarity, January 22nd, 2016. Happy New Year, family and friends. Many, many thanks for so much support and care over this year from both long-standing friends and new pen pals. I feel very grateful and am always humbled by the encouragement and resources sent my way by folks who are doing so much already to increase our collective chances of survival. The news has been full of stories about someone winning the big money pool that is accumulated for the U.S. Lotto. But the most important win has nothing to do with money. I'm betting on the movement to win big this year, in getting more control over their communities and defending against police brutality and racial inequality, in winning more victories for animals and in the defense of wild spaces, in creating social relations based on respect, dignity, and compassion for all people, irregardless of their race, orientation, creed, or gender presentation. Thank you. Thank you for coming together today to hold up those members of our community who struggle so hard behind walls to keep their sense of self intact. Sovereignty over ourselves, our bodies, is essential for any other kind of liberty to be possible. By reaching out to trans prisoners, you affirm their right to define themselves for themselves and defend them against the overwhelming voices who claim that they do not exist, that they must allow others to define them. In the isolating environment of prison, this is toxic and intimidating and amounts to the cruelest form of psychological torture. By offering your help and solidarity, you may just save a life. I know that for the last year and a half, as I have struggled to assert myself as a trans man, as I have advocated for the relief of appropriate medical care for my gender dysphoria, it has been the gentle and loving reminders of my extended family of supporters who have given me strength and courage to continue. Please join me in offering this help to so many others who need it to keep going. Never underestimate the healing power of a letter. Those letters have kept me going, and I want to pass the gift on if you'll help me. Thank you again for coming together on this day, for connecting to those on the inside who truly need you, who need you to see them as they really are and striving to be. Until all prisons are gone, we need to work hard to support those of us inside, especially those of us who are not always as visible to the rest of the world. We are always stronger together. Marius Mason, January 2016.
We also feature a segment from Dissident Island Radio's mid-December show of 2015 about the changed security situation in France since the Paris attacks by Daesh-affiliated militants. The host of Dissident Island speaks with Camille, the name for anyone coming out of the ZOD and speaking out about experiences there. In this segment, Camille talks about the state of emergency declared by the government of President François Hollande, the suspensions of rights to publicly gather, the extensions of the state of emergency for 3 months, the challenges to folks with dual citizenship, the nighttime raids of immigrant communities, and experiences of the folks at the ZOD as they enter a period of possible eviction. Camille also talks about how the ZOD at times acts as a refuge to immigrants and refugees seeking a break from state repression on a self-defended land project. Check out the twice-a-month DIY radio show out of the London Action Resource Center by visiting dissidentisland.org. But first, some words from anarchist prisoner Sean Swain. What you say, what you say, what you say,
what? Come like a boy! I got a free copy of Fifth Estate in December. Have you read this? I wasn't even aware of the Fifth Estate. Growing up, just north of Detroit, we picked up Canadian stations and there was a half-hour news talk program called Fifth Estate that we picked up from Windsor on tinfoil rabbit ears. But that Fifth Estate was nothing like this Fifth Estate. One article in particular caught my attention, written by Bellamy Fitzpatrick, formerly of West Oakland's Free Radical Radio. It's called Megacities, the Fifth Horseman of Arcology. In it, Bellamy presents the recently announced Chinese government plan to construct a megacity around the Chinese capital Beijing. They're calling this megacity Jingjinji. So, some statistical data about this megacity. It's projected to span 82,000 square miles. That means this singular city would be the size of Kansas. Kansas! 10% of China's current population would live there. We're talking about the single most massive artificial environment ever conceived. This is a dystopia on a grand scale. Think about what this means. This megacity would be more like a giant industrial prison, a vast nightmare of humans boxed up in aisles and rows of cages, with plexiglass windows looking out onto the smog and toxification. We're talking about an environment that distorts and destroys humans in fundamental ways, multiplied and expanded on a scale like never before. Bellamy presents a word I hadn't seen used before as he describes the human city as CAFO. CAFO is an acronym for Concentrated Animal Feeding Operation. With what we know of urbanization, the creation of any city is the creation of a dead zone, a space of land that can no longer sustain life. So with the immediate landscape of a cityscape murdered, the population of that urban environment must be sustained and maintained by vast amounts of resources shipped in from the outside. That is, because you cannot grow corn in Manhattan, you gotta ship it in from outside, creating greater stresses and strains on other land bases to sustain not just the life that occupies it, but the lives of the urban dwellers as well. So, when we think about that dynamic, and when we imagine 130 million people crammed into a single megacity, a single sprawling dystopia, think also about how the agrarian world surrounding that monster metropolis will be burdened. We are essentially talking about the reinvention of swivelization, a new model of cramming humans into smaller spaces, more densely packed and more hopelessly dependent completely on the resource distribution network. The delivery of basic necessities like food and clothing by an even more centralized control system. The spaces where we exist are being re-engineered into something that looks more and more like an industrial feedlot for chickens. We now face the very probable reality where a generation of millions of humans will be born, live, and die without ever having ventured beyond the boundaries of a single city, without having seen with their own eyes a natural environment containing trees and dirt and wildlife. Having run out of natural spaces to conquer for expansion, the swivelization program now seeks to condense life itself, become more compact, even as its excesses foreshadow its doom, its edges unraveling in obvious ways. Perhaps this Chinese supercity will serve as swivelization's last hurrah, a giant concrete eyesore that would be visible from space if only the denizens of the next Neolithic had ambitions to float around out there. Hopefully, by the time the engineers with the big brains cut the ribbon on Jingjinji, the natural world will already be nibbling around its edges, and those engineers will have the dubious distinction of having created the largest abandoned ruins in the history of hierarchy. This is anarchist prisoner Sean Swain from somewhere inside Ohio's torture complex. If you're listening, you are the resistance.
You can write to Sean Swain at seanswain243-205, Warren, CI, P.O. Box 120, 5787 State Route 63, Lebanon, Ohio, 45036. For updates on his situation, his bid for U.S. president in 2016, and more writings by Sean can be found at seanswain.org. Would you care to introduce yourself and talk a little bit about what you do?
My name is Gary Wagaman. I do a lot of prisoner support work, activism in the country, and I've formerly been incarcerated before briefly and had to fight the state for activism, but that's pretty much my background. I'm heavily involved in doing prisoner support after going through what I had to go through for a couple of years. And definitely on the forefront of supporting, doing letter writing and stuff like that, prison abolition work.
That's awesome. As far as prison abolition goes, are there favorite tactics that you have that you also would feel good about talking about on the radio? Like you mentioned letter writing. Are there other tactics that you like?
Tactics will include outside just call-ins. I don't want to get into like specific tactics, I guess, with prison abolition work, but getting information from the prisons and then addressing them with, I guess, the state and trying to get the conditions of these prisons resolved, but also getting prisoners information that they could use to organize and stand up for themselves, especially when it comes to prison labor and stuff like that.
Yo, for sure. No, that sounds super solid, and I'm into people not talking about specific on the radio.
Yeah,
that they don't want to.
Yeah, and I don't know how my comrades would feel about that.
Yeah, no, thank you. Do you want to say anything else about your own experiences with tangling with the prison system, or would you rather let that rest?
I would just say that, like, after being involved in activism, being arrested, and having to go through 2 years of fighting a particular case in Chicago, that it really inspired me to not only the prison system, but also post-released and the court system in itself, really inspired me to help get involved in supporting folks going through that, because it's definitely a corrupt system and definitely a money-making system, and it just needs to be addressed aggressively. And a lot of our comrades, especially in the activist community, are going through, especially Marius Mason, going through a process where the state wants to make an example out of activists coming out of the Green Scare and all that stuff. So that's why I do what I do.
For sure. For sure. You mentioned Marius Mason briefly. Would you describe the call out for the January 22nd day of solidarity with trans prisoners? What are its hoped for outcomes? Or you mentioned like education and all that stuff. I wonder if you'd talk about that a little bit too.
This is why prisoner letter writing is really important. I received a letter from Marius Mason in September, requesting that there be a day of solidarity for trans prisoners on January 22nd. It was kind of a weird situation for me because I was moving from Detroit to Kansas City, and he considers Detroit home. So I was, you know, speculating like what I could do, whatever, and became part of one of the core organizers, you know, in the country, and took it to a couple conferences, this letter, just so people could read it and let them know that, like, this is happening. The request from Marius Mason was that he wants this day because of the abuse that's going on in the current prison that he's being held in with trans women of color. So respectfully, I think the Mary's Mason group and Black and Pink and myself through ABC pushed this agenda to get this day, you know, to have this discussion, to bring up a dialogue that needs to be brought up. And we have now like a coalition here in Kansas City, a coalition of trans groups coming together and speaking about this problem. And it's pretty phenomenal. Now it's gone international. I'm getting requests from radio shows in Montreal and stuff like that. So yeah, that's the situation we're at. Like, in the, it has to do with the abuse and the gender identity not being recognized in prison. And the fact that even in general population in prison, transgender people don't feel safe and are often in protected custody.
Yeah, protective custody meaning solitary confinement.
Yeah,
is that right?
For sure. Yeah. And so outside of not feeling safe in the outside world with all the violence, they don't even feel safe in prison. And sadly enough, feel safer in solitary confinement when in prison. So it's an issue that needs to be addressed, and it's a discussion that needs to be had, and that's why we're doing this day.
Gotcha. I heard a pretty horrifying statistic one time. I heard it from this documentary called Cruel and Unusual. It came out, I think, in sometime like late in the aughts or whatever. It's about trans women in prison, and I heard a statistic in that documentary that 2 out of 3 trans people in the United States today are incarcerated, which just seems like, I don't know if you've heard anything to that effect or anything like that. Have you heard?
I can speak on my own personal experience. I'm a white cis male, so just dealing with it, like I'm educating myself also, but also, you know, during this process. And that's why I reached out to trans groups to form a coalition to help get the, you know, educate myself and have this discussion. But when I was in jail in Chicago, I was in the hole, which was 23-hour lockdown, 1 hour out. And just speaking from my own experience, it was mostly trans women in there. And if it wasn't for them, to be honest, I probably would have killed myself. But it was just sad because they felt more comfortable in that situation of being isolated like that than being in the general population of even the jail, which is already terrible. So that's just my own personal experience with this and why, like, you know, I'm really glad that this discussion is happening. But it was literally 3/4 of my division were trans women, but not recognized. They were in a men's, you know, it was all male division, supposedly, but they were trans women, and it was 3/4, didn't make any sense. And then there was other people that just had mental issues that were there, and you could completely tell, and they just put them in isolation, you know. So the reason I was there was because my case was all over the news. So, and whatnot.
It's cool that y'all were able to support each other through that. I think that that is really awesome. And it's also, you know, extraordinarily dangerous for women to be in men's prison. You know, that's just like the bottom line. And for men to be in women's prison as well, you know, it's just...
Yeah, the sexual violence and abuse and humiliation, it's a constant struggle. And prisons definitely do not recognize that or care, and they have failed miserably to address what's actually going on inside.
I think you hit the nail on the head earlier regarding prison, because it is, you know, it's a capitalist money-making machine at its very core. It's rhetoric of rehabilitation and reintegration into society is just, it's a smokescreen.
I mean, just briefly, when I was in jail, there are people come in and out that knew the COs, which are the guards, and the COs would be like, hey, why are you in here now? You know, like, it was like their third, fourth time, you know, just reentry all over the place. they like knew each other on a personal basis, and there's something definitely wrong with that.
For sure. Recidivist rates are really, really high.
Yeah.
It's designed for that as well. We're speaking with Gary about the January 22nd Day of Solidarity with Trans Prisoners. More after this musical break, after we hear Gloss with Lined Lips and Spiked Bats off their 2015 demo. This is WSFM LP in Asheville, 103.3 FM on your radio dial, and this is the Final Straw Radio. To get back to the Day of Solidarity, I read something on Marius Mason's support page. Is the Day of Solidarity meant to be a space and time for people to come together to talk about this issue, or is it intended to like foment some sort of action making machine, or you know, is it all over the place? Is it self-directed?
What was presented to me through Marius Mason was, which is kind of weird, I haven't gotten a letter back since this letter of request, so communication is definitely hard, you know, especially when you're dealing with prisons, and definitely with somebody like Marius Mason who's highly monitored. The request for me was like, it doesn't have to be big, I just want like people to talk about this. They can do whatever they feel comfortable doing. I think in Kansas City here, I can personally speak, is that we want this to be more of an educational thing, like dialogue. It's the first time this has happened, so we're not going to be marching in the streets, but we're going to actually have a serious conversation as to how we can move this forward, because we want it to happen every year. So to have the serious conversation, the literature, and then I'm like recommending people read Captive Genders, books like that, you know, and just talk about it.
Yeah, that's awesome. And Captive Genders is a book that, did it come out AK Press or is it PM Press?
Yeah, AK Press.
AK yep. Press, and it's trans bodies and the prison industrial mm-hmm. complex or something. That's
yep.
a book of essays. It's really, really good.
Yep. And I highly, we're highly recommending people read that, you know, too. And I think the Marius Mason just won this dialogue and the awareness out there. And it's cool in Kansas City. We have a coalition, like I said, of, you know, trans groups and different groups coming to the table, and they've all acknowledged that this is a problem and this is something they need to talk more about. And just on that level, I think that's important. So we're having an event here in Kansas City where, you know, there'll be food, some entertainment. People are going to be talking about their experiences being incarcerated as a trans person, you know, and just putting it on the forefront.
That sounds really, really great. Would you talk about a little bit about the process of coalition building? How has it gone down in Kansas City, and like what are some of the like obstacles or things that you didn't expect in that process?
It was, on a personal level, it was weird for me because I just moved to Kansas City, so I didn't know what was up, you know, kind of with relationships with groups and stuff like that. We all know that can be a problem sometimes. but there's been a large amount of trans violence here in Kansas City and murders. There's a huge population of trans people here. So I was like, well, you know, like, I just reached out to a friend, a comrade of mine. I'm not going to say the name because I don't know if she'd feel comfortable, but she has helped me. We just threw a meeting together with different groups like Equal, PYO, IWW, ABC, stuff like that have come together. And I think there was kind of tension between some groups, and it's just like, I think like what we saw, you know, put down on the forefront was like, we don't care about your politics. This is an issue that needs to be addressed, and this is discussion that needs to be had. So that was part of the coalition building, and everybody agreed, like, yeah, like this tic tac arguments that we've had in the past are useless, and we need to talk about this right now. So it's been tough because I got that letter in September and then traveled across country with it. And now it's become an international thing. And I think people are a little bit overwhelmed kind of about how popular this has become in such quick time. So we've only had 3 months to like really organize this. It's been tasking, but like beautiful at the same time. So
definitely. And I would imagine that it's self-directed nature. I mean, there's this whole like email this person if you want ideas for your day of action or day of solidarity,
yeah,
or whatever. But
yeah.
Have you been getting a lot of emails?
Yeah, I've been getting a lot of emails. And, you know, not only just in the United States, but like across from England and like Australia and all kinds of places. We're just recommending that people, you know, do your own thing, have a discussion. It does not have to be a big thing. This is the first time we're doing it. It's a learning curve for sure. And we want to do it every year.
I feel really inspired by the whole put your politics aside and come around and or come together and talk about an issue. I think that that is something that I would personally really like to see more of.
For sure. Personal beefs, you know, set aside. This is a bigger thing than that. Yeah, that's pretty much what we're...
And we have so much beef here. We have so much, like, beef within the anarchist scene and or in the, like, radical, like, politically left spectrum scene or whatever. And it's really great to hear that that is in some way getting... I don't know, getting eliminated to some degree.
And there's... A lot of it has to do with just miscommunication. To be honest, I mean, somebody sent an email, somebody didn't see it, and then all of a sudden somebody reacts, you know, and gets mad. And, you know, it's pretty much like, you know, organizing. It's just all it's like, oh, wait, sorry about that. Like, that's the miscommunication. It's like, okay, didn't see the email.
Yeah, it's literally the easiest thing that happens over email listservs is miscommunication, because it's just thread upon thread upon thread. I don't know.
Yeah. That's why I personally just like to call people and just like, or text them, you know, get their direct contact, because emails can be overwhelming. I'm on a bunch of listservs and stuff, so it's kind of tasking, you know, to keep up with everything. But like Marys Mason, serving 22 years, did a lot of activist work through housing and water in Detroit. And for him to like put out a request for this day of solidarity is a pretty big thing.
Yeah.
If you want to write Marys Mason, you have to address it Marie Mason, because the prison does not recognize the name change. And so a lot of people have been sending mail and it's not been getting through. And that's because they're putting Marys Mason on the envelope. So that's another thing we've been dealing with.
Would you briefly describe Marys Mason's case?
Yeah, Marys Mason's doing 22 years. He was sentenced in 2009 for allegedly destroying a GMO lab at Michigan State University and then some logging equipment and stuff like that. other people went down in that case. It's part of the Green Scare. He was definitely made an example of, you know, for sure. His partner at the time only did 6 years. That's well known. So yeah, 22 years for a GMO lab at Michigan State University. Like, that's what he went down for.
And he has, is it true that he has the distinction of serving the longest sentence, or getting served the longest sentence of any Green Scare activist?
Yeah, for sure. It's alleged that his partner at the time cooperated with the police, and that's why he did 6 years, and Marius is doing 22 years. So you can research that if you'd like.
And he, Marius Mason, came out as trans. When did he come out as trans?
2014.
Gotcha. And he's been super vocal, like a very, very vocal trans person.
And it's still hard because it happened. And then, you know, a lot of people are still working on that. You know, it's hard to communicate in prison, you know, with Marius Mason, because, you know, you send one letter asking what's going on and you might not get a letter back for 2 months. So depending on if they even give him the letter. So organizing from a request from a prisoner for like a day like this in 3 months is quite hard. And then, a lot of people write Marius on the envelope and it's rejected immediately from the Texas prison. And then it goes back to them and they don't know why. And it's because they don't recognize the gender identity switch.
Yeah, maybe I should mention for listeners who are unaware that Marius is a transgender man, meaning he's a female-to-male individual. So he's incarcerated in FMC Carswell, which is a women's prison in Fort Worth, Texas.
Yeah, it's definitely, any male that goes in there is like highly monitored. But yeah, so I found out really odd that like I got this letter requesting to do some organizing around this day, and then like I responded like this is happening, and I don't think it got through.
I feel like when he eventually gets the news that this has gone international, I'm sure he will be thrilled. You know, I would be if I was in his position.
For sure. So yeah, I don't know if anybody's gotten, that's one thing I do have to like touch up with the Marius Mason group. They don't like to see that somebody inside of a jail is organizing something, anything.
Yeah.
So the call out was pretty specific, you know, and I can only imagine it went out to a bunch of folks. I know Australia is definitely, New Zealand, definitely working hard on this day also. We've had a little bit of burnout with some organizers, you know, like that had just had to step back because it's gotten so big. So yeah, just working through it in these last couple of weeks.
So you've spoken a lot about the state of that trans people have to endure in prison, what with heightened oppression, heightened surveillance, all that stuff. I was wondering if you would speak to the importance of having a day of solidarity specifically focused on trans prisoners. It's my understanding that this is basically the only one. Is that true?
Yeah. This is like the first day I think has ever happened of this. So I think just on a basic level, people need to, like, we'll have addresses for trans prisoners to write to. It's Marius Mason's birthday this month, so we'll have birthday cards for sure. I think it's important for people to realize that this is happening just on a basic level. You know, like a lot of people, even some of the trans groups that like I've talked to have acknowledged that, and they have acknowledged that it's not a discussion they've had before, to be honest. And on certain levels, it needs to be elevated. So what we're doing just as like the first year, like it's important to have this day because trans women, especially women of color, are being sexually abused, humiliated, and beaten up in these prisons. And I think it's important that all prison support groups and people in general educate themselves about what is going on. You know, I think everybody's on the same page with that. When we first announced the day, people were like, so are we going to march? And like, I think marching doesn't do anything necessarily when this is, when you don't know what you're marching for. So it's just kind of like, here's literature, here's people speaking, listen, read, and then we'll move forward from there. And I think that's what Mary's Mason wants. It's just, this is an awareness day, and acknowledge the fact that there's prisons in general are terrible, but like also it gets worse when you're a trans person. So that's why this day is important.
Definitely. I think that Mumia Abu-Jamal even maybe wrote, not specifically about trans prisoners, but he said something to the effect of, prison takes society's ills and amplifies them, and like magnifies society's ills, basically.
Mm-hmm.
And trans people, especially trans women of color, get incarcerated at much higher rates than other trans people. And I think that that is very, very important to acknowledge. And it's cool that that mm-hmm. was part of Marius's call out.
He did call out trans women of color in particular. But I think the message is, you know, trans prisoner solidarity day, because just on that level, people don't understand what's going on, you know? So, but we also are emphasizing like trans women of color are even treated worse and worse. So it's like, but without getting to specifics, it's just like transgender people in prison are getting treated like hell. And then work the discussion from there. But yeah, the initial call out was trans women of color on my letter, but just talking with trans people that are incarcerated, that have been incarcerated, I think this is just an issue too, that in general, yeah, we can work from there with bringing up a dialogue.
Definitely. One point I did want to make is that, you know, it's going to be highly variable depending on like who you are, and no like unilateral experience should be foisted on this group of people. Like, for example, we spoke with Cece McDonald right after she got out of prison, and I asked her, I was just like, so like, how was it? What was your experiences? And she was like, honestly, in general population, I felt like a queen.
Mm-hmm.
And none of the prisoners, my fellow prisoners, wanted to just talk to me about my experience. She was just like, I just got thrown in the hole a lot because I'm trans. And it was the COs.
Yeah.
The COs were my
enemies. That's exactly where I was at. Yep. People are screaming in the hole because I had never been to jail before. And they're screaming, no sleep in the hole, no sleep in the hole. And I asked my cellie, I was like, what's the hole? He's like, we're in it. I'm like, oh, really? Like... He's like, yeah, this is 23-hour lockdown. And I'm like, oh, interesting. you know, like, a lot of the prisoners were cool. Like, I'd go out for, like, the hour maybe here and there. But they were like, are you going to continue to do activism after this, protest? And then I was like, I'm coming back and protesting this place. I promise you. So, yeah, that's... was my inspiration, because I know what it's like. And then afterwards, we were doing jail support in Chicago once, and I went over to the division and I stood outside the windows, and people are pounding on the windows, and like, I started crying almost. So I've just made it prison support my main thing.
That's really rad. And since the United States is the number one incarcerator in the world,
mm-hmm.
It's definitely really important work for anybody to do, but I think especially anarchists to have some sort of analysis and have a
mm-hmm.
have an idea of how to proceed.
For sure.
That's all the questions that I have. Is there anything else that you wanted to add?
I guess, you know, feel free to encourage people to just do something, have the conversation on January 22nd if they haven't already organized anything, and just be aware that, you know, what's going on. and not stop on January 22nd, but keep the conversation going.
Yeah.
That'd be cool.
You said you got a lot of emails. Do you want any more? Or like, would you be willing to broadcast your email address?
Yeah, sure. I'll do my Gmail, I guess. Okay, yeah, you can broadcast that.
Okay,
or
cool.
Do you want me to,
Is there a website at all, or a website for January 22nd, or is it just
good? Yeah,
okay.
Transprisoners.net is the main hub, and groups can register their activity or event on that page. It also provides literature and stuff like that for people, you know.
Awesome.
So, yeah.
That's really rad. Hey, Gary, thank you so much for coming on the air and talking about this day and your experiences. It's been a pleasure to talk with you.
Awesome. Hope to talk to you in the future also.
Yeah, likewise. And we've been speaking with Gary from Kansas City about the fast approaching Day of Solidarity with Transgender Prisoners, which will occur this Friday, January 22nd. For more on this day and to get ideas and to give report backs, you can visit transprisoners.net. If you'd like to send our guest an email again to get ideas on how to proceed, he'd really love it if you blew up his email box. You can write Gary at gcwagaman@gmail.com. And now for the segment from Dissident Radio about the ZOD and the state of emergency.
So I'm speaking with Camille from the Notre-Dame-de-Londe Zone des Fonds, or ZAD. The reason that I wanted to speak with you this evening was because of the emergency laws that have been put in place in France following the Paris attacks of November this year, the so-called state of emergency. Could you begin by explaining to us what powers have been given to the authorities and how they're choosing to use those powers?
There are many things that they can do. They can close any website that they say has a link to terrorism without delay, without a trial, without proof. And what they have done a lot is house arrest. A lot of people have to stay at the house and to go to a police station sometimes 3 or 4 times a day. For most of the ecology militants that had this measure, it was only until the end of the COP21. But for most of the Muslim people that are accused of being radical Muslims, it's until the end of the emergency state, which is like end of February. So it means basically that they cannot go to work anymore. It's 3 or 4 times a day, so they cannot really do anything. And during the night, they have to stay at their house. And this, they can decide a house arrest without any proof, without any trial. It's just basically on what the secret services know about you, and they don't have to know much to suspect you and to do this measure on you.
And do you think this is affecting the ZAD where you are in particular?
The ZAD I'm living in, the ZAD of Notre-Dame-des-Landes, was not affected a lot so far by it because I guess it's a bit catchy for politicians to touch it because it's very broadly supported. But like a lot of demonstrations were cancelled during this global conference, the COP21 in Paris, the past 2 or 3 weeks. And a lot of demonstrations were planned to demonstrate against and protest against this hypocrisy. Most of the associations that were calling for demonstrations cancelled their call-outs because all demonstrations were forbidden in Paris because of the state of emergency. Some people tried, like more anarchists, communists, or radicals, tried to demonstrate and were heavily repressed. Like most of the French people, like they were beating up and gas, a lot of gas. They were also circled in a big place in Paris, so they couldn't move. Some of them spent the night or a day in custody. And for the non-French ones, some of them went in detention centers for a few days with no more reason than the secret services know that you are an activist. So they sent those people to detention center and they left with an order to leave the French territory.
So am I right in saying that these measures are predominantly affecting people in the Muslim community?
Yeah, it's predominantly Muslims. There are also, like as I said, people that are suspected of any what they would call subversive political activity. But in our area, we don't have so much information. So what we are starting to do now is trying to gather information, trying to make links with the people whose house was raided or who have to go to the police station each day. We know, like for example in Nantes, like close to the Zard where I live, that the districts of the city that were most touched are obviously the districts where there are Muslim communities and non-white communities. It's also important to say, I think, that there is a state repression, but there is also like the racist repression of people that are not necessarily cops. A lot of Islamophobic and racist aggressions happened, and the rhythm of them increased a lot since the attacks of Paris. So it means it's predominantly Muslim women that are attacked because they are visible as Muslims when they wear the veil. So like some people were shot with guns in the street because they looked Arabic or Muslim. I don't think that any of them died, but it's just a matter of luck, and some were attacked by random people who are racist and Islamophobic.
And is there a sense that that is being maybe not state sanctioned, but are the authorities making any moves to clamp down on racism in the street or anything like that, or are they ignoring it?
The Prime Minister just said recently that the state has a duty to protect the Muslim community against those aggressions. But it's really ironic for him to say when we know that the raids from the police mainly touched the Muslim community, and the vast majority of those raids touched people that have nothing to do with even radical Islam or... Like, there is never any good reason for me or any good pretext for a raid, but those raids, most of them were really grotesque, and like, it just seems like they are trying to create terror in the Muslim community or what.
And is there any sense that these communities are organizing in response to what has happened since the emergency state has been brought in?
There are things that start to organize, but I can only talk of what I know, and it's not much. I know that there are general assemblies regularly now in Nantes to organize against the emergency state, and they were quite well attended, so that continue, and there have been demonstrations organized by this general assembly in Nantes, and there were not crowds and crowds of people, but maybe between 500 and 1,000 people coming to those demonstrations.
And are they predominantly people from the Muslim community or people from other communities showing solidarity?
I don't know if it's people showing solidarity. I feel like it's predominantly non-Muslim white people organizing against the emergency state. And I hope that most of those people are aware that the repression is targeting mostly Muslim communities. But I'm not sure, because I feel like there is like quite a strong Islamophobia in France, and not only in society, but it's also like in anarchist, anarcho-communist, leftist scene.
So I'm not so familiar with the policing and justice landscape in France prior to the state of emergency, but from your perspective, how is the way that demonstrations have been dealt with under the state of emergency different from normal times?
I don't know if it's worse everywhere all the time, but it's definitely scarier, because we know that the context is different. We know that the police has basically all the rights now for the 3 months that the emergency state has been voted. And we know that they feel like they have all the rights, and they do. It's also a special context where everyone praised the police, or a lot of people praised the police, because they were the heroes of the 13th of November and after the attacks in Paris. And I mean, it's always really dangerous to praise the police and to raise them as heroes, because they are armed and most of them are racist, and those that are maybe less racist, they are speaking up. So, I mean, I don't know about the demonstrations, but there have been like 2,200 raids of the police, like in people's houses since the emergency state. Most of them have nothing to do with any kind of terrorism, or if not, maybe the terrorism of the state, because most of them were really brutal, like people were humiliated, beaten, and some of them were during the night. Like, you know, they came with many cops of the special forces with war rifles and sometimes masked. And I mean, on those 2,200 raids, most of them, they found nothing or drug. Like, they arrested drug dealers. And even the authority, they have to justify it by saying, yeah, okay, we don't find many things, but it's also to gather intelligence. So they just take advantage of the situation to repress the Muslim community first and leftist people doing things and not necessarily doing like crazy radical things, but also quite moderate people and groups.
As time goes by and as people maybe see what happened at COP and maybe what's happening to their Muslim neighbours, do you think that opinion is shifting against the state of emergency, or are people generally kind of happy to sacrifice whatever, you know, freedom or whatever?
It's hard to say. I think that definitely some people that could be in favour of the emergency state just after the attacks of the 13th of November in Paris, seeing what really happens and seeing the testimonies of Muslim people and of any people who was targeted by the repression, seeing that, I feel like people don't agree with that. Like they see that it is grotesque and they see that they are not arresting any new terrorists or I don't know what. So
I guess to finish up then, do you think the state of emergency will end, or do you think that they will try and extend it again?
I think if it ends, it will be only because of protesting and the struggle that we are able to organize against it, because I don't know who would dare to finish it and what politician would take the risk to end it. In the past, emergency measures or exceptional laws like that, we can show that they always became generalized. Now, for many years, we've been living under that thing that's called the Plan Vigipirate, which is like measures, security measures against terrorism, and it has different levels. At the start, it was supposed to be like a short-term thing, and now it's permanent, because they always justify it, because there is always a risk of terrorism, because France keeps doing the same foreign policies and keeps selling weapons around the world. So that's no surprise. But so I feel like people get used, for example, to see militaries in the train stations or in airports patrolling with war rifles. And so I don't see why they wouldn't make it more permanent if we don't struggle against it. And they are now seeing how they can make it constitutional, because so far it's not allowed by the constitution to live permanently under an emergency state.
Cool. Thanks to Camille for talking to us there. A few resources he gave me to read more about the state of emergency. These are all in French, but I've tested them out, and if you put them in your browser that has an auto translate, it comes out all right. So if you look up wiki.la quadrature du net, so that's laquadrature.net. That's one site. There's delinquents.blog.lemonde.fr. There's www.islamophobie. So that's islamophobie.net. And then the website for the ZAD is zad.nadir.org. So yeah, thanks to Camille. Sorry for the quality of the recording. Yeah, couldn't be helped.
You're listening to WSFM LP 103.3 in Asheville, North Carolina. This is The Final Straw, and I'm Bursa Goodness.
And I'm William Goodenough.
The show can also be heard on KXCF in Marshall, California, KWTF in Potomac Bay, California, KOWALP in Olympia, Washington, and WCRS in Columbus, Ohio. The show will later be archived at thefinalstrawradio.noblogs.org, and you can email us with questions or suggestions at thefinalstrawradio@riseup.net. If you care to, you can send us an actual letter at The Final Straw, care of Asheville FM, 864 Haywood Road, Asheville, North Carolina, 28806.
The show is brought to you by Firestorm Books and Coffee. Located at 610 Haywood Road, Firestorm Books and Coffee is a worker-owned cooperative in Asheville specializing in offbeat, underground, and independent literature. Firestorm's full catalog of books and zines can be found online at firestorm.coop. Thanks both to Dissident Radio for allowing us to rebroadcast their material and to Gary for talking about January 22nd. So to take us out, we will hear a track from Mondragon, which is a French punk band off of their 2006 album. This track is called Les Cafards, which means the cockroaches. For those interested in anarchy things, swag, news, magazines, the website It's Going Down, which can be found at itsgoingdown.org, is going to be putting out a print version of their material very soon. Stay tuned for that at itsgoingdown.org.